Welcome to the Upshot subscriber bonus this week. I'm Charlie, he's Jamie. We're joined by Nate and Val. Thanks for coming back for this second segment here.
We're happy to be back.
So this was all Jamie's idea, and I think it's a great one. You know, you've had tremendous success in your disc golf careers, multiple championships, multiple majors, you name it, financial success, and now you've more or less moved on to a new stage of your life where being out on tour is not part of the equation anymore. And so Jamie thought it would be great to look back at what your career arc was. And, I don't know that we need to go into super nitty gritty of like every year of your career or anything like that, but can you take us back to the beginning when you first got started on tour and explain a little bit about, you know, what it was like to ramp up from being, you know, in your teenage years and then ending up going out on tour and making this, you know, your lifestyle?
How long do we have? I feel like we both have pretty exaggerated stories, but, after being nominated into the Hall of Fame, you know, it made me think of the beginnings, and my story is pretty interesting in that regard. I mean, people know that my brother plays and I come from a family, we all play disc golf, but I didn't really get into the sport and start playing tournaments and start playing competitively until my mid-teens. I was about 15 or 16. And up until that point, I'd still travel with my family and we'd go to tournaments, but I wasn't into it. That just wasn't something that sparked my interest. I was playing sports in school. I was hanging out with my friends. And, you know, when I'd go out and travel with my family, that's all I was doing with them. I wasn't going out and playing their practice rounds while they'd go and play the tournament. So it took a while for me to get into the sport. But once I started making friends in it, and once I was able to drive, got my license, I was able to go to tournaments on my own. So it's really interesting that I really didn't have a lot to do with the sport, but it always surrounded my entire life. And then, you know, following in the footsteps of my brother who jumped on tour in the early 2000s, I kind of knew that would be the lifestyle that I can jump on. And so once I graduated high school in 2004, that's when I really realized I can go out and play these tournaments. I can make a career of this because I saw my brother take the lead on that. And of course, my parents are fully supportive of that. And I even looked back on an article, you know, at Disc Golfer magazine had asked, where do you see the plans going? And, you know, after high school, most people go to college. And at that point, I knew disc golf would be a really important thing in my life. And I chose to take the path to go on tour immediately. And knowing that my parents supported that choice was really huge. And the rest is history. What about you, Nate?
I think I could go on a monologue that could take up an entire podcast. I've just been so fortunate in my life to have met so many great people and been really just influenced by a lot of different disc golfers and people. But you got to remember when we started, both Val and I were just 1 year apart in age. The general age of everybody else was at least 8 to 10 years older than we were. There was very few. And in fact, that was why Val and I kind of came together as friends, even in the early days, just because we were similar ages. And that wasn't the case. And throughout my career, I was always sort of guided by guys that were older than me. It goes back to, you know, I've been very fortunate in this case, Steady Ed Hedrick. I mean, he gave me, I would get suspended from elementary school. I'm not proud of it, but it would happen. class clown type of thing. And my dad was working for DGA. Instead, he had said, yeah, bring the kid. He can work. So when I, you know, school would say, hey, we don't want your kid. Anyways, I would go to DGA and Steady
Ed. Stay in school, kids.
Steady Ed, yes, absolutely. It all worked out in the long run. I learned my lesson. But Steady Ed would give me a disc a day. He would say, Nate, go pick a disc off the rack. And, you know, that's where it started. And then, you know, meeting Tom Schott, Hall of Famer, the designer of De La Viega, working for him. He gave me my very first job to delivering Redwood benches with him when I was 12 and 13 years old. I was the map. You know, I had to do his maps. And then, you know, meeting one of my closest buddies, Jim Hagen, playing disc golf with him at De La Viega, you know, 10, 12, 13, 14 years old. Eventually meeting Harold Hampton and Mark Whittingslow. And these were guys that were friends with Steve Rico. They took me to my first Travel Worlds alone in 2001. In 2000, I traveled with my dad. In 2001, I traveled alone with Harold and Mark. We called ourselves Team Tripod. These guys are playing Grand Masters now. They're 20 years older than I am, but I'm just that kid that's learning. You know, hey Nate, do the dishes, right? It's your turn to do the dishes. You're learning along the way. And then in 2003, I graduated from high school. The day I graduated from high school, I jumped on a plane and I flew to Ann Arbor, Michigan to get ready for the Great Lakes Open, which was happening that next weekend. I was picked up in a truck, Ford F-150, by Steve Rico, Bomba Rico, and Josh Anthon. Okay? I get into the truck. Josh has got his knee is the size of a grapefruit. He had won the previous weekend. Won a bike in a raffle, was doing a wheelie down the hill, twisted his knee up. Josh is flying out the next weekend. But me and Bamba and Stevie, boom, there we're off on tour. 2003, we're traveling, we're playing. Stevie wins the second event. I'm just learning along the way. Guys, I'm 18 years old, traveling with guys that are 12 years older than me, 12 and 10 respectively. Or I think it's 8 and 10. Either way, they're teaching me just how to be an adult, how to be a man and play on tour and play disc golf. I'm watching Stevie win NTs. And then we get to Kansas City. I win my I take second place to Cam Todd. I almost beat him in the final nine, and I never looked back from there. I knew at that point I could win. It was a couple of years later when 2005 came along. I was very fortunate to win the Worlds in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Harold Hampton was caddying for me. Steve Rico and David Felberg were playing what they called security, just keeping people away from me in the fairways in 2005. And again, just incredibly blessed to have future Hall of Famers playing security for me and one of my best friends caddying for me. It was really just an amazing experience. And we don't have all day, so I'm going to fast forward all the way to the very end. It was an absolutely incredible career. So many people involved there. And, you know, craft beer came out of the need for another hobby. Val's dad had showed me the light of brewing his own beer. And I'm just one of these kind of nerdy guys that likes to figure out processes and, you know, brewing is very process driven. I started home brewing, and from the very first home brew that we ever made, just like the first time I threw a disc back in 1991, I wanted to be a world champion. I wanted to be a brewer. I wanted to own my own brewery, and we never looked back. Val's been very supportive in that, and it's something that we do together and that we love. And eventually we looked at each other and we said, wow, this has been an incredible ride. We met each other through this. We love disc golf, but we got to do something else. And the world would be, it would be sad if we didn't give our efforts to something else that we were also very passionate about. And so we did it. We're doing it together. And it's been just an incredible time. And now it's time for a new career. So we'll have a new career arc to talk about in 15, 20 years.
It's so interesting, and it's funny too, because the disc golf world just knows you guys as Nate and Val. Like, but there was a time when it was Nate Doss and it was Valerie Jenkins, and you said those names separately and you said the full names, and it wasn't like, there is no other Nate and no other Val in disc golf. There's just you two. in those days, and for context, we're talking about the beginnings of the national tour here. I think 03 Golden State Classic was the first national tour event, if memory serves.
It is, and Stevie won it.
Yeah, Steve Rico won that one, not too far from his backyard. And, you know, what I'd love to hear from each of you, like, what was touring in that time like? Because we just don't really know. It's kind of a dark period in history. But for you two as teenagers, as promising talent, maybe even considered prodigies at that point, with a bright career ahead of them, what was the feel and the vibe and the look of the touring scene?
You know, in 2003 when I joined it, and then very shortly after that, I think it was 2005, was your first year touring? '05?
Yeah, I would say after full time,
yeah,
five.
Yeah. Those days, 2003, for me, I mean, it was a family. I think we calculated it at 41 players, because see what happened was in 2003, it was the very first year of the NT series, and we had a 5 tournament run that were all NTs all in a row. It was the Great Lakes Open, it was the Brent Hambrick event, it was the Mad City tournament in Wisconsin, the tournament in the Twin Cities, the Majestic, and then finishing in Kansas City with the KC Wide Open. So try to picture this. It's 5 events in a row. Everybody's going to the same 5 events. RVs were a big thing, and we happened to be in an F-150, Stevie Bamba and I. But we had Jay and Dez, who were in a Dodge? It was a small truck. It was a tiny truck that you could never have imagined Jay Redding in with a with a canoe on the top that you couldn't imagine him getting in either. You're like, this guy needs a freaking aircraft carrier, you know. But yeah, Jay and Dez. You had the Winnie crew, right? So the Winnie crew's out there: Felberg, Avery, Todd Branch. Al Sugar Shack had left the Winnie crew by that time. Discraft had an RV out on the road, so you had Carlo Pelg and a few other Discraft players that were traveling in that. Ron Russell had his own rig. Barry Schultz was along for the ride. And guys, it was a family. We were all learning together how to do this. We started making a documentary about it in 2006. This lifestyle. It was a lifestyle. And we did this is where the term Monday Fun Day came from. I know the earlier touring guys will say that they came up with it, and they very well might have. But within our year, 2003, we all did things together on Mondays. We're talking Cedar Point we went to. We did cliff diving up in northern Wisconsin. We went to a water park in Wisconsin. The cliff diving was in Minnesota because Kale took us to that. But either way, you know, it was this thing that we all did it together. We had groups of 20 people at a time doing certain things. So that was 2003. Now let's hear about 2005. Because I wasn't on tour in 05. Val was.
Yeah, yeah. So 2005 is when I kind of jump-started. It was with able Burl. To go out and travel. I made my first big trip out to California. You know, I just graduated high school 2004, so I didn't travel too much right after that. But 05 is when I got out there. But I really didn't start traveling until 2007.
Okay.
So 2007 is when Burl's dad actually bought her an RV. She needed somebody to travel with her. And so that's when I flew out to California again, and we started the touring season. And we just have so many amazing memories. I mean, Burl was an amazing travel partner. I mean, we were always competing back and forth and back and forth. And at the same time, it was that friendly competition. And we always liked to have a good time. And she's the one that showed me the way of, yeah, we play disc golf for a living. And yeah, when we're done with the round, we're going to leave it all on the course. let's go do something fun. Let's go experience the places that we're traveling to. We're spending all the time driving to. Let's make sure we enjoy the town that we're in. So that took place all across the United States. And then I think it was 2007 as well. We traveled to Europe and Burl showed me the way there. I mean, traveling from country to country. She had so much experience traveling around the world. So I kind of followed in her footsteps. So just like Nate, you know, Burl, there's a pretty huge age gap there between the two of us. But to follow somebody with that experience of traveling and knowing the way of staying with friends and meeting people all around the world, those were experiences, you know, it would take us that long to experience. But to follow in their footsteps, it was priceless.
Yeah. Absolutely priceless, for sure.
But man, the stories we have, we can't say them on this podcast. They're incriminating. But when we were traveling, I mean, the crew ended up being Nate and I, Avery and Burl. Like, that was the core group. Felberg was in there, but we were the original crew that was traveling over to Europe or going to Japan. Like, that crew in 2007 to 2010... We were the only tourists going out to these countries, and so it was like superstar status in the disc golf scene. And you know, eventually more players started to travel over there, but it was very exclusive group that was traveling, and we made the most of it. I mean, from late night clubs to, you know, experiencing these countries to the fullest. I mean, yeah, exactly. I can't say any more than that, but we had a good time. And that was the mantra of our group, and that's how we led those, you know, 5 years of being on tour and making sure we had a good time. I feel like we transitioned, and then now we have players that are so competitive. There was that kind of era where, all right, if we're going to beat a Nate Joss or a Valerie Jenkins,
chip on the shoulder. Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to get serious about this. So we saw that shift, the tour kind of break up into smaller little groups.
Yeah. It's definitely much more fractured now just because of the fact that there are so many more competitive players and the fact that people just, there's a lot more superstars now. So everybody's got things to do, clinics, and you know, you're doing this and you're doing this video and you got that podcast going and you're doing post round commentary for this video or whatever it is, you know, you got the McBeast challenge going on, or you know, these people are doing whatever. So that's where the fracturedness came from. But in that sweet spot from 2003 to 2008, there was not a lot of that going on. So kudos to all the young guys. Honestly, I just want to say this, like Paige Pierce, I'm so impressed by her. What she's able to do and still be a great player is phenomenal.
Elaborate on that a little bit. Sorry. I want to hear, like, sure, when you say, because it sounds like you're talking about work-life balance, and it's like this generation had, your generation, when you started touring, you guys, you didn't call it that back then, but it was what we call now work-life balance. And then all these young guns come up and they're like, all right, well, I have to live in the gym and, you know, sleep underneath the bench and like all that stuff to beat these people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, I guess, yeah, we didn't really call it that because for us, we were all doing it together, you know, and we were basically excited just to be out there and compete. And, you know, when push came to shove, we wanted to win. It didn't matter. But at the end of the day, if somebody else did, it was like, cool, we'll go celebrate with them now. You know?
They got beers.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So, but nowadays, there's just so many more expectations. But not only expectations, opportunities. You know, there's now more opportunities for people to do post-round coverage, to do their own podcasts, to do their own video blogs, to do, you know, your guys' podcast or go on Terry and Johnny's, do clinics. There's just so much more. And I think for me, by the time we got to that point, we had already started transitioning to thinking about potentially the brewery and where our lives were going to go in our 30s and, you know, yada, yada, yada. But when you're 21 years old and those are all the opportunities you got, you might as well take them. And just to elaborate a little just more on Paige, I mean, she's a 5-time women's world champion, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, female player of all time. But she's doing videos. She's on social media. She's enjoying it, seemingly, too. You know, I can't speak for her, but, you know, I enjoy watching what she's got going on. You know, the Avocado Open. I mean, all these things that even just recently during COVID, it's like, I'm just so impressed with what they're able to do. And they might look at us and come spend 2 days with us during our life and go, how the heck do you guys do this? You know, you're up at 5:30 in the morning and you got all this work to do and blah, 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 blah. But it's just a different thing. You know, we all work hard at what we've got to do. And it's the fruits of that work is all of this great content that we all get to see and listen to and watch. And it's a lot of fun to be a part of this generation for sure.
Right. But I would say, I mean, we were playing so well during that time from 2007 to 2010. I mean, we were playing so great. And yeah, that work-life balance, we were having such a great time. And again, leaving it all on the course. And we see this generation, a player like Paige Pierce, taking time out to go fishing whenever she can.
That's true. That's
doing
true.
All these little side trips at every place she is. I'm so glad that she is doing so much of that and taking us all on her travels with her. I think that's so huge. It's something you can't really just tell somebody to do. You kind of have to be that adventurous spirit. But there's so much pressure on her to win these days, but she makes time to enjoy it. And I think that really plays a huge role in the competitive spirit. Gives yourself a break to relax, enjoy. And then when you get on the course, you're fully engaged and you're energized and focused to win.
Yeah, perfectly said.
Maybe what you just said is the answer to this question, but even given the changes in tour lifestyle, let's say today versus when you were, you know, winning your world titles, what advice would you give to players on tour now or young players who are 16, 17, 18 years old that are thinking about going on tour about how to manage that and have a fulfilling life while competing at a high level?
Great question. And I think Val, if not nailed it, alluded to it. It's enjoy the experience. Don't always think about the end result. It's not just about who wins and who loses. If that's one thing that I could convey to people about my arc of my career, getting back to where we started with this, it's that the stories I told you, very few of them had to do with who won the tournament and who didn't. You know, you have to be able to compartmentalize that and say, that's why I'm here. But you need to enjoy the experience, the practice rounds, the post round hanging out, the you know, hanging by the pool, doing this, doing that. Because if you don't watch out, life will pass you by just as fast as anything else. And I just want players to know that it's okay to take a day off. It's okay to have a bad tournament. It's okay to have a bad practice round. It's okay to accept what happens in those moments, because you have to accept the bad just like you need to enjoy the good. Those two things balance themselves out, yin and yang, however you want to talk about it. You need balance in your life. And I think Paige Pierce is a perfect example of that in the modern day. She seems to certainly have that balance. So that's what I would say, Val.
I would say the most important thing, and it goes along with what we're talking about, but, you know, pick a good tour partner. I think that
good point.
That is make or break in any any situation. I mean, you're gonna you got to pick the person that's on the same wavelength as you, same kind of lifestyle, or maybe get you out of the comfort zone and get you to travel and lay off just constantly focusing on disc golf. But choosing the right person is one of the most important things. You're with that person how many hours a day in the car, driving to the tournaments, after the round. That's your person to confide in. And so if you're not on the same wavelength, that could be a catastrophe. So I think that's a pretty huge thing to think about if you want to get on tour. And of course, make sure you got your savings in order. I mean, still, disc golf it's working its way up there, but starting out, you're going to have to put in your time, and it's going to be a little expensive for a while, but it really, truly pays off to get out on the tour, and you're playing every weekend. You're only going to get better with the more experience you build and the better players that you play with. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say.
Fantastic thoughts from both of you guys. All right. Thank you so much for y'all's time. You've been wonderful, and we could go on and on. I think we could have you on for the next 5 episodes and subscriber bonuses, and we'd still be talking about interesting things. To kind of wrap up today, what I'd like to ask you guys is, with all the changes, with all the phases of your career, of all your life phases off the course, when you get the opportunity, however rare that may be these days, to step up on to the tee, first tee of a local course or just a fun weekend, what does disc golf feel like to you today? And is that different? You know, obviously it's going to be different than competing in Worlds, but what is the meaning and the role of just playing a round of disc golf today in 2020?
For me, it was always about that competition. That's why I enjoyed playing disc golf. I always had to have something on the line or something to strive for. So for me, you know, the practice rounds didn't get me in that mode, but the drive of the competition and to do better than I did last time, that was everything. And so nowadays, if we ever get the chance to go out and play, and Nate usually has to drag me out to the course anymore. But it just seems so effortless to play. My mind isn't even thinking about the shots. I'm kind of going through the motions. I feel like my game's pretty much in the same point. But yeah, my mind just isn't there. You know, it's a different mind frame than I was when we were on tour and playing so much. And it's all about that competitive drive for me. That's what kept me in the sport. That's what kept me coming back year after year. So now it's definitely shifted. I mean, our full focus is on the brewery, and, you know, same as disc golf. We sacrifice so much to be the best that we could be at the sport of disc golf. Now we're doing that same kind of thing, focusing everything 100%. You know, still sacrificing things, but making sure that the brewery is the best that we can make it be. And so disc golf right now, it's kind of the back burner for me. I hope to get back into it, and maybe it'll switch. Maybe the competitive vibe won't be the only thing to bring me out to the course. But yeah, I just want to make sure that it's enjoyable for me whenever I step out on the course these days.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you really got to think about what it means to not only play a sport for a living, but be a professional and win events and do things like that. There's certain tricks that your mind plays on yourself to get yourself into that mode, into that headspace. You know, think about Michael Jordan. You know, if you were to ask Michael Jordan that same question right now, like, hey, man, what's playing a basketball game for you? And I don't know how often Michael plays basketball these days, but it's probably not that often. You know, if you were to ask Jack Nicklaus that once he said, OK, I am stepping away from golf, maybe he plays all the time. But it's one of those things where for me, and it sounds like for Val, too, were playing disc golf when we were kids because it was fun. And as we got older, that fun never went away, but the goal changed. And when you strip away that goal, you got to get back to what it was when you started. And that's the fun aspect of it. So now when I do finally find some free time and I talk to one friend or another and we're going to the course, I get excited. Not because I'm going to go out. Oh, I mean, we get to the course and the guys are like, oh, yesterday I shot a 3 down and I birdied this hole and I canned this 40-foot putt here and there. And you hear all the war stories. I'm like, I'm just there for people to talk to. But for me, I'm just there because it's like, guys, I'm just here to throw some shots. I'm here to throw it and watch it fly and get back to that fun that it was all the way back there in 91. And so when it does happen, I focus on that. I don't worry about the score. Competitive juices try to trickle their way in, but I do as best I can to just leave those in their compartment, which we filed away a couple of years ago. And who knows? Who knows where competitive disc golf is for Val and I? But at this point, playing disc golf is just back to being fun.
Yeah. But it's so hard. I mean, what you're saying, like the expectations. I mean, yeah, we're always going to be competitive at heart. So fun for us isn't just shooling it up on the course and missing a bunch of putts.
Good point. I'm not like, hey, I'm in this bush. This is awesome, guys. I love this.
We're out in nature.
Yeah. So it's a real weird balance. And then, of course, when we step out to any course, you know, we have those expectations to play well, no matter who we play with. So it's trying to find that rhythm, you know, life after competitive disc golf.
Yeah.
Disc golf life after competitive disc golf life.
Well, best of luck to you both as things hopefully start to normalize post-COVID. And I do look forward to getting out to Bend and having some beer.
Yeah, come on out. First round's on Nate. Second round could be on me.
Wow. Third round on Jamie.
Yes,
all right.
Of course.
Fair enough. Because you know we're doing three.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
All right. Thank you very much, Nate and Val, for talking with us today. And we'll chat with you again soon. And we'll see you on the broadcast here in just a couple of weeks.
Exactly.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
That's going to do it for our subscriber bonus segment. For Nate and Val and Jamie, I'm Charlie saying so long. We'll talk to you next week.
See ya.